Hey, we're back.
Fuck.
Editing.
Cool. Good
time right when we get back.
I'm sorry. I needed to sneeze.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Supertro. This is episode 12. With us today, we have Kane.
Hi.
Cody.
Hey-o.
Tommy.
Hello.
Cameron.
Happy Christmas!
Yeah.
Yeah, right? And myself, Josh. Merry Christmas, y'all. So, yeah. Our schedule has been really super crazy recently. If it's not sickness, if it's not sales we gotta do, small emergencies, family members just randomly showing up unexpectedly.
Yeah. Holidays happened.
The holidays happened real hard. So, but we're here tonight to bring another episode to you, dear listener. And yeah, without further ado, I think we're gonna go ahead and get into what we've been playing. So, Cameron, what you been playing, man?
Boy, you know, trying to do a little catching up on the year, but overall not playing a ton. I probably put a couple hours into The Last Guardian, but I think I'll hold off on talking about that mostly. Like Kane probably talk about that. I think Kane got quite a bit farther than I have. We'll have a little bit more interesting take. Really quick on Last Guardian, though. Definitely has its flaws, but its good parts definitely outshine its flaws. Beyond that, gosh, I definitely have completely slowed down on Pokemon. I feel like there has been something.
What about
that
poison starfish, man? What happened?
Yeah, well, I got a perfect one, and then I was done. So, like, it's the Holy Grail, and yeah, okay, moving on. No, actually, what I have been putting some time into, like I said, is some kind of yearly catch-up stuff. I put a couple hours into Super Hot, which I really like. Just that's a game I could find myself going back to a whole bunch.
Just normal Super Hot or Super Hot VR?
Normal Super Hot.
Okay.
Haven't done a lot on stuff on VR as of late. But yeah, just absolutely loving Super Hot. The mechanics are great. I could just, like I said, if they had like downloadable levels with just those mechanics, I could get really into that. Beyond that, though, that's kind of been about it. Like I said, holidays have happened, so I haven't really been playing a whole lot.
Super Hot's
nice.
A great time.
Well, then...
Yeah, it's on my catch-up list. It, you know, Oxenfree's next with, still need to play Hyperlight Drifter. Kind of a lot of big indie games I need to catch up on.
Nice. Yeah, well, Kane, why don't you tell us a little bit about Last Guardian?
Man, I can talk a lot about games that I've been playing. We haven't talked in a while, and I've done some major binging with pretty much the free time that I've had. It's just been video games. So... played all the way through Final Fantasy 15. I finished that.
How was it?
I don't know. Do we want to talk about this stuff now, or do we want to save this for our Game of the Year talk? Because I can go real deep on both these games.
Give us a hot take. I don't know.
Surface level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I've said this before, but Final Fantasy 15 at first did not win me over. It kind of was slow and just not really what I wanted, I guess. But the game won me over in a huge way. I can't even begin to describe how much it won me over. The combat is, I think, a really good take on the RPG of Final Fantasy. And just, it's a great evolution. It's fun. It's frantic. It can be a little bit kind of spammy at times. But I think that that's something that they can work out in future games if they continue this combat at all. But just the customizing and just the leveling up and just if the combat feels so good, and it really I'm just gonna rant about this for a while because this is one of my favorite parts is the music in this game. The music in this game is some of the best music I've heard in a game, and I don't even know how long. It's incredibly good. There were so many times when just you have different combat songs depending on like where in the world you are and what enemy you're fighting, and there's a couple tracks in that game that just the first time, and this is going to sound a little bit hyperbolic, but literally I played this game with headphones on, and I got into this part, and I was just at this really emotional part of the game Basically, you get another character in, and you just, you're kind of exploring the world with someone who I kind of grew attached to in the story that I didn't expect to. And I heard this amazing battle music track for the first time where this other person is fighting with you, and it literally brought a tear to my eye. Like, it was so incredibly epic that I just, like, goosebumps, like, I was in it. Like,
wow.
Oh, man. So good. Yeah, that composer, Shimomura, I think is her name. She is just, she fucking killed it. So, awesome. And music for me is a huge deal. I'm always the kind of person that turns the sound effects down in games and cranks the volume up because I like the music to be at the forefront. And that game does a great job.
Nice.
But, yeah, the game definitely has issues. I mean, everybody's said it before. It has some story beats that really, basically don't beat at all. They just kind of flatline. You have no idea what's going on at all. And,
you have to watch the movie.
You're kind of, yeah, you're not wrong. Kingsleaf helps, but
sadly
it does. But at the end of the game, it really, what you know of Kingsleaf doesn't really help that much. You're still left wondering what is actually happening with these characters. But
did you, beat it before or after the little story patch in thing they did recently?
So have they actually done that? I don't think that they've added that yet.
Oh, okay. I thought they snuck it in already.
I don't think so. If they did, I would have looked it up. I feel like I would have heard about it, but most of the articles that I've read have said that they plan on it.
But it's such a slippery slope.
It is.
Especially for like people who beat the game quickly like you kind of do. It's just weird. It's almost like punishing early adopters in a sense.
Yeah. It is. And I would like to see that stuff. I don't feel like personally offended by it. I think that it's fine. I don't know. I guess I'm torn on it, but it really doesn't affect me that much. Like, the story in general really wasn't the whole reason I was there, but the game does have a good payoff. It has a great payoff at the end, which is good. You should at least, if you don't plan on finishing that game, you should at least see how it kind of finishes out, because it's good. For the rockiness, it kind of does a cool thing at the end. And
awesome.
Yeah, there's a certain point in the middle of that game where it hits the highest high that I have felt in a really long time, like in a game. Like, I was totally in it. That was when I sent you guys that text message, just like beaming, because I was just like, fuck, this is so cool. But the game does have its ups and downs, but that's pretty much it on that. How far are you guys through that? Have you guys kind of fallen off on that?
I'm chapter 11.
Okay.
I've yet to play it.
I'm not terribly far either. A couple hours.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the first couple hours, I wasn't... like I said, I wasn't huge on, but it does get good.
Yeah. Anything else, Arcane?
Yeah. I also played through and finished The Last Guardian, which is kind of a similar story for me. As you guys know, I'm kind of a gameplay-first type of person. If the game doesn't play well, then I usually have a pretty bad time, even if the story is good. And that's kind of how I felt at first playing this game. I didn't quite get it. I knew what it was doing, but I didn't quite connect with it. But once I learned the rules of the game and I learned how you are supposed to interact with Trico, and you need to be patient. Patience is a huge part of this game. People like to say that, oh, the AI for Trico is bad and he doesn't do what you say, but I never really experienced that. It was just, it felt like it was a stubborn animal that was, like, confused what you were trying to tell it. And there was never a part where I was, like, slamming my head against the wall trying to get Trico to jump over a bridge, but there was times where it's just like, you spend a good, like, 25 seconds pointing in a certain direction and being like, Trico, you need to jump, and he's looking at you like, what? Like, what do I need to do? And I'm like, jump, and he'll eventually, like, get it. It felt like I was training an animal how to do a trick rather than I was fighting with AI. And that happened, you know, like a couple hours in. So I got into that and I really enjoyed that part of the game. But once you get like, I don't know, a good like quarter of the way through and you kind of get into more of the open world and some of like the more plot stuff starts to happen, which is fantastic, by the way. How far are you guys through this, just for context? I'm not going to spoil anything, but...
I haven't played it. But I watched Paisley beat it.
Okay, so you've seen the whole game.
Well, I actually just saw the ending.
Okay.
So
I'm not terribly far. Like I said, a couple hours. Probably right after... I don't want to say anything either, because I could... Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been able to command Trico yet? Like, can you hold R1 and be, like, pointing at a direction for him to go?
I feel like I have been able to for the whole game. And
you have, but it hasn't, like, told you how to do it.
Yeah, and so I don't know if I've gotten to that point. He's let's just say he ate me.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I'm at least to that bit. Which
zero
said,
context
not
that
far,
I understand that.
Right. Yeah, just
tease.
Yeah, it is. And that happens pretty early, so don't anybody get salty about that. But yeah, it really won me over in a way even greater than the other game I was just talking about, Final Fantasy 15. This game, like I said, I was really skeptical about it, but man, I fucking love that animal. Like, I grew attached to that thing in a way I don't know if I've ever been attached to a video game living creature ever.
Companion.
Yeah.
Only a few hours in, I'm getting like, real good vibes too, even from Trico and the game in general. I wouldn't say it's controlling the companion or anything either that I personally or anyone else I think has an issue with. I think the one thing that's hard to defend is the camera.
I think that's its fault,
which there's been a lot of awesome games throughout the years that have had not the best camera. I won't even say Shadow of the Colossus had camera problems.
Yeah.
But that's about it, really. Yeah. The camera's been frustrating for me a couple of times, but the controls are weird. You get used to them, like jump being triangle and stuff. I wish that they gave you like controller 1, 2, and 3 kind of layout, like a lot of games like to do nowadays. But beyond that, no, I'm probably more likely to see The Last Guardian through, which I've heard it's only like a 12-hour playthrough, than probably Final Fantasy 15, and I like them both more than I was kind of worried I was not going to, so.
Yep. The storytelling in The Last Guardian, I think, is, and you're right, the camera is dog shit. That was the one thing that really kind of irritated me, and the controls can kind of be imprecise, especially near the end. You start to end up doing some pretty precise platforming, and the way that the kid moves and stuff can be a little bit frustrating, but it was never like, I have to redo 15 minutes of the game because I accidentally fell off a cliff. You know, it was never that. The checkpoint system's great, but just for context for this game, like with me, there's several parts in the game that this kind of happens, but basically you feel so, you don't feel like you're guiding anything. I truly felt that we were working together. I needed him to go places and he needed me. There were so many things where he helped me from falling and I helped him from navigating and pulling spears out of him. Like, that stuff really got to me. And there was one part in particular that's not very far along, but he basically is jumping along on these pillars and you're riding him, and the pillars start to crumble, you know, as you would expect, but he basically perches on this pillar. And you climb off of him to go, like, open this bridge so that he can jump from the pillar to the bridge, because he's basically stuck. The pillars behind him broke, and he's just standing there perched, right? So you get off, and he starts, he whines at you because he's like a dog would, you know, if you shut the door. Like, a dog is whining at you because you're leaving him. Mm-hmm. And anyway, you go a little bit farther, and then you eventually start to hear him cry. Like, he's crying at you. And you look around, and there are enemies that have come out at him and are throwing spears at him while he's perched, and there's nothing he can do about it. And I was just, like, hurt. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I need to help you. I'm so sorry.
Oh,
like,
my so God.
You know. Yeah, like, that is the kind of stuff that this game does to you. There's no, like, you need to care about this animal. This is why. It just, the bond that you form with it is just, you have to experience it. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is cool. Like, even, like, you go through, like, archways, and they're, like, you know, a normal human-sized archway, and he sticks his head through, and he's just, like, pawing at you.
Yep.
And a part that got me early that I wish I was recording, because it really surprised me, was it's just very, very beginning. First time you ever have to get him to jump into water. You jump in the water yourself. There's a room right next to the water, and there's three barrels in there, and the barrels have things that he likes to eat. You kind of use them to lure him down and stuff, and I was expecting to have to throw all three barrels into the water to get him to jump. I just throw one barrel in, and he just fucking cannonballs right in after it. Like laughed out loud at that part. He's very cat-like. Like, looks like a dog, but I would say much more like a cat in a lot of ways.
Yeah, his personality is very cat-like. Mm-hmm. Just even the way that, like, when you get a barrel for him, like, you get food for him, his eyes turn yellow, and just his personality, like, you just, it's just such a thing. if you love animals, you just appreciate it even more, because you bring the barrel, and it's just like, look, I've got a snack for you, and he, like, turns at you, and he's like, ooh, and he, like, steals it from you, you know? Yeah. Like, just, it's so good.
Trigo's probably the only character this year that I would put above some of the characters from Mafia 3 for character of the year. Mm-hmm. It's really, really is the strength of the game.
And it's all portrayed through gameplay.
Supporting actor or something.
Yeah, and there's a watch Trico button even, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
Cool. Well, that sounds pretty awesome. We got to keep moving on, though. We're trying to make this one a little shorter. But anyways, we're going to go into what Tommy's been playing.
I actually finished some games.
Oh, nice.
More or less. Finished up Mafia 3. Oh, so sweet. I haven't been playing any of the newer stuff. I've been playing stuff from, like, months ago. But Cameron and Josh were the only ones playing Mafia 3 besides myself. And since I got a late start, I decided to do the just you and me ending, which is essentially where you have three underbosses that you recruit to your side, and you have the option of continuing out the game with just one of them instead of all three. And because I was curious about that, I decided I would do the gameplay with just having Vito be my underboss, which means you essentially have to piss off the other two to the point where they leave, and then you have to kill them. And it's not one of those things that you can really do accidentally. Like, the game itself gives you plenty of hints about how if you keep doing what you're doing, the characters are going to get angry, and then there's going to be repercussions. And probably the reason why they do that is it honestly didn't feel that rewarding. I really wouldn't recommend playing through... I would recommend playing through keeping all underbosses alive and happy, because it definitely feels like a better gameplay experience. It didn't really feel that rewarding.
It was definitely a challenge when I was playing through it, yeah.
And, I mean, it's one of those things where as you make your underbosses happier, they increase the money that they make from the districts, they unlock the perks and everything like that. And the reason why I chose Vito is because if I was going to only have one underboss, I needed the upgrades in order just to pretty much be able to beat the game. But just the conversations, that's one of the strengths of the game. And not having that with two of the characters really felt like I was missing out on something. And I would really only say do it if you want the achievements, because I've actually already started up a second playthrough so that I can go through and actually beat it with the characters and everything like that, because I like the conversations that everybody has and everything like that. So I'd like to... What's that?
Oh, what led you to Vito?
Vito, it specifically his upgrades.
Oh, okay.
Like, I needed the health and car upgrades just to be able to survive some of the missions.
Because I YouTubed a solo playthrough, or leave one person left at the table, and it was Vito as well. So I was just kind of curious if the game kind of naturally draws you to Vito. He's also the Mafia 2 character, so.
Yeah, like that definitely helped. He would have, I was hoping, maybe a little bit extra to say in conversation considering how he came from Mafia 2, but it wasn't really there. And also there's just no repercussions for doing this, because once you do it and piss off the person enough to where they leave, you have to take them out. And until you do, you lose the perks associated with that underboss. But then once you do that, you just promote their lieutenant to the new position of underboss. They don't go to the sit-downs with you, but you get all your perks back. You get anything you unlock back. There's literally no consequences. Even when you kill Thomas Burke, his daughter Nikki is the character that takes his place. And she's just like, I hate what you did, but I need the money, so I'm going to work with you. And I'm just like, what the heck? Everything Kane just said about The Last Guardian, about having like actual emotional attachment to the character, non-existent. For a father and daughter. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah.
Well, like, I suppose in the game, though, too, she did not
hold she didn't her like her dad. But, regards.
But yeah.
It's one of those things where, hey, you just killed my dad. All right. Even Stevens, I guess. I don't know. It was so bizarre. It's like.
It was a plague of last generation, like decisions that they made us think meant something and they don't actually mean anything. I think it's still kind of a plague, like even games like Until Dawn and stuff recently. Like, I don't know if I've still found a game that truly like feels like it's given me that promise of my decisions truly matter. Like, they wouldn't say like a D&D campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this one, it's one of those, hey, here's some choices, but like I said, the only reason why you would actually want to do this is for the achievement specifically.
Yeah.
Because you are probably missing out on some great gameplay. And I do have to say that the mid-credits scene with Donovan during the credits.
yes.
I'm not going to give any spoilers or anything like that, but the game is given to you. The story is presented to you in three different ways. One is characters in the game during present day, so 2016, talking about past events. The second is archival footage. And then the third is they interact with you during when the game takes place. So the game starts out late 1968, so around that time frame. And Donovan is a character who interacts with you during the game. So he's there, late 60s, and then through archival footage. And his archival footage takes place during a Senate hearing when they're asking him about the events that transpired. And he's just flat out telling him all the terrible stuff that he did. He's not hiding anything. So I knew something was probably going to happen because he is pretty much incriminating himself. And it's one of those things that when I saw it, I was just like, that looks like something Donovan would do. That's pretty much Donovan. Yeah.
That's totally his personality.
Yeah. Sure. And I mean, you know, he's a company man, so maybe he's a little bit crazy. But I was just like, yeah, okay.
It made me want a little bit convoluted. Mafia 4 really bad.
Yeah. Like, one of the DLCs has him and I think Link and Clay over in Vietnam, so that might be interesting.
Oh,
but
that would be really cool, mm-hmm. actually. Cool, and then quickly you said there's other games you finished up as well, too?
Yeah, more or less. I managed to hit 110 on my Demon Hunter in World of Warcraft, despite not actually finishing an entire zone in Broken Isles.
Nice.
So I still haven't finished Azuna. I still haven't even done the dungeon for that zone, but I'm max level now.
Beautiful.
Yep.
So it's just, I don't know. I have no idea how I did it. I guess all the experience from the holiday quest or something like that. But it's just weird how I managed to hit level cap with essentially not doing any of the expansion content.
Hit me up.
Sweet.
It's dungeon time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I actually need to start doing that. Because at 110, Jesus Christ, they give you so much stuff to do. It's just exclamation points galore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You'd swear Solid Snake would be sneaking around Azeroth or something like that. Just.
Oh, man, not doing a very good job.
Yeah, no kidding.
But all right, cool. Cody, what's the hip haps?
I have been playing jack shit. Cool. I've been just tired and moody and hormonal, so I've been watching garbage romance anime. So
nice.
Oh, man.
Okay.
That's
wait,
my life.
Wait, wait, hold on. What anime romance is not garbage? I want a name.
Well, no, I just...
I think she means all of it.
Just in general. Like, all, it, oh, okay. It's kind of all, like, half of anime is garbage, and in that garbage half is romance anime. There's a special
it's a very small
circle in weeaboo hell for people who watch romance anime.
Howl's Moving Castle is probably a romance anime.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
garbage.
I guess, yeah. Some of the Miyazaki stuff.
I know, I'm trying to dispute you there. Like...
Yeah. But
Full
no.
Metal Alchemist and Winry, maybe?
No, no way. No.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to weave out.
I just like Full Metal.
Hold on. Of it's... anime, but...
Time out. What podcast is this?
This is the Weeaboo Super Trope.
Fun Time Hour.
Yeah, Fun Time Hour.
That's true.
Cody's.
While we're talking about TV series, real quick, because this is kind of about video games. If you guys haven't seen...
Man, don't you say Westworld.
That's what I'm going to say. If you haven't seen it, watch it. You got to watch it.
And it's Westworld?
Yeah, Westworld.
I know. I fucked up, okay? He said video games. I thought
it's,
Westwood...
It's a game maker's wet dream. Just watch it.
All right, I'll watch it.
I will, eventually, at some point in my life.
Yeah.
It's really, like, it really is about video games in a lot of ways.
So. Did they actually change a lot of the plot from the movie? Or
there's
is it more or less the same?
I think it's loosely based off of like a book or something. I think people say Paradise Lost, but
I remember
it's definitely
the movie.
Metaphorical that way.
Yeah, and I was planning on watching the TV show anyway. It's just,
huh.
But really, it goes Stranger Things and then Westworld as far as new stuff goes this year. Those are like the only two shows to really watch.
What about Mr. Robot?
I need to
Stranger Things.
No way, Black Mirror. I still need
Black Mirror
catch up
is good.
On that.
I feel like that's yeah. Anyhow, sorry, I just want to interject. Westworld, very good.
Yeah,
but
so,
yeah, no,
back to
I've
garbage
no
romance
games,
anime.
So that's
okay.
So that's what I've been playing. It's my computer watching and crying, being emotional.
Cool.
You should give us names. What's the anime?
I refuse. I refuse.
People are going to be curious.
Nope.
You have to answer the people.
Nope. I will let people.
No, think of the audience. We need to keep it, Cameron. We need to keep our audience.
Okay, fine. So the first one that
just a sample.
The first one that I watched was I don't want to tell you. Josh knows it affectionately as Orion's Horse Club, but it's called.
Wow.
It's actually called Oran High School Host Club, and it's about a bunch of pretty boys and a girl that they think is a boy, and then they find out she's a girl, and then she breaks a vase, so she has to work for them, and then she's a host, and they gotta keep her secret, and there's just romance everywhere, and it's ridiculous and terrible, and I love it.
Man, just gotta say that garbage romance anime sounds a whole lot like some of the comedies. From the 80s.
Yeah.
Because you just described an 80s comedy
movie.
Yeah.
If like, we did thumbnails, man, right? This Google image search would be perfect.
Yeah. And then the other one that I... Don't Google search this. Don't.
I already have.
No. The second one I'm going to say. Do not Google search it. Is a... Hide my shame! Those of you that can't see, I'm just hiding in blankets right now. The second one that I've been watching that I love even more is a yaoi romance anime called Sekaiichi Katsuo, also known as World's Greatest First Love, and it's about a bunch of closet homosexuals working at a publishing office for shoujo manga.
Oh, nice.
Well,
does that one like judgments. Break the fourth wall a little bit?
I think I understood about half the words you just said.
Right. There were some Japanese. There's
some definitely
English.
A podcast title in there somewhere.
I'm just waiting for the tweak in Craig.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's what the Google image looks like.
I wouldn't know what to Google, Cody.
Good. I know. It's not super bad. I mean, it's on Crunchyroll, so it's not like I'm not watching porn, but it's damn close.
When it grows up, it wants to be porn.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Well, I think I'll cap off the segment.
I'll just stick to my video games, I guess.
I have been playing a very Josh game this last week, or this last little bit. I have been checking out Space Hulk Deathwing.
How's that?
Space Hulk : Deathwing. It's pretty fucking rad.
That's real quick. That's the one based off of the board game, right?
Well, so I think it shares. Yeah, I mean it's a board game. Like you are basically going to these Space Hulks and, you know, going down corridors and trying to recover relics and complete objectives, but it's real time. It's a first person shooter. You're playing as a librarian. In the single player campaign, you're playing as a librarian.
Librarian with the chainsaw sword gun.
Okay.
Librarian.
Yeah,
they got
a
funny idea of librarian
in Warhammer.
So essentially it's you and two other space marines that you command, and you complete objectives. You basically are uncovering like this mysterious object in this giant space shuttle. And what makes the game kind of interesting is it's very similar to like a Left 4 Dead, where the Tyranid army has been festering on the ship for like thousands and thousands of years. It just is complete, like totally unrelenting. Will continue to attack your squad from every angle. The other thing too is that these levels are built kind of like a labyrinth. From where you start to get to like your first objective, there's at least like 15 to 16 different directions you can go, or different corridors or rooms that you could pass through to get there. And as you progress through the game, you unlock new weapons, you find new psionic spells that you can cast. It's pretty cool. You can also, like, if you feel like you're gonna, like, there's a Tyranid attack that's coming from your rear, you can always lock doors behind you, and that will slow them down for a little bit so you can continue to trudge forward. And also, like, if there's turrets and stuff, you can hack them to use against the Tyranids, or you could just blow them up and stuff like that. I don't know. It's incredibly atmospheric. You know, the Space Hulk ship that you're on has been floating for millennia, just forever. And so when you get in there, everything is just totally broken down. And yeah, it just has a really cool atmosphere. But
does it seem like it was born out of Vermintide? The trailer kind of made it look similar.
Yes. In fact, I'm not sure if it's the same team that works on it, but it is very, very similar to Vermintide. I would say it's easier than Vermintide. Because Vermintide's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult.
It doesn't have like the same like leveling system or like crafting weapons and all that. But yeah, as you continue to uncover relics and such, you do get different weapons, and there's different classes and stuff as well too, like medics and assault classes, hacking classes, all that. So, yeah, it's pretty good, and it's only $35, brand new. So.
Yes. Single player, multiplayer.
Oh, multiplayer. I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it's totally like a Left 4 Dead.
So style one game. To four, one to five.
I don't know. I didn't.
Just came out. It's like 6 days old.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, it came out last week.
It almost sounds like better Alien Swarm.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, it's first person and all that, but yeah, it is very, very similar to the Alien Swarm, where it's, you know, team effort, and everybody has their role to play, so it's pretty cool.
Neat.
And then, was that the one with randomly generated maps or static maps?
I don't believe so. I'm assuming when you're playing multiplayer, everything's randomly generated.
Okay.
But in the single player campaign, it is a very rigid storyline with very like several paths to go down. But yeah, that's kind of what I played different from the rest of the group. I've been chugging along through Final Fantasy 15. I've definitely gotten to a point in the game where it kind of feels like I've hit a pretty big speed bump. And it's not that I'm like totally disinterested in what's going on, but it's like, okay, come on, let's hurry the fuck up. Let's go.
Yeah.
Although there is a Colosseum in this game, and I spent a good like 5 hours doing that fucking thing.
I haven't done any of that yet, actually.
Nice. That's what Final Fantasy games are all about.
Well, it's not quite what you would think in terms of Colosseum. It is basically it's gambling. It's like,
right.
It's cockfights.
Oh, yeah, you watch them. I saw that.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I can get into that, too.
Yeah, it's it's pretty great. You like, it can be like four groups of monsters, or it could be like three or even like two. But yeah, you just review the monsters for each round. It's totally random every time. That's different, like random monsters, random levels, random amounts of monsters. And you just look at the odds and you're like, okay, well, you know, this guy kicks ass, so I'm going to drop quad nines on this. And then they destroy everything. And then you make a shit ton of money. It's great. Well, you don't actually make money. You cash in your gil for medals, and then you bet with medals, and then with your winnings you go to the price store to purchase anything from like regalia upgrades to weapons and stuff like that.
This is like the most brutal Chuck E. Cheese I've ever heard about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just trade in your tickets for. It's weird. The mini game in the game has its own mini game. In-game currency.
Yep. That's
Squaresoft.
I was going to say Golden Saucer, yeah. Man.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, how does this compare like, to the snowboarding minigame?
Oh, man.
Controls are a lot better.
It pales. Choco Hot and Cold.
Yeah, Choco
the
Hot
all-time
and cold.
Greatest yeah. Side quest in video games.
Crazy Motorcycle? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is... I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to those.
Yeah. I'm like the only person who loved Tetris Master, I guess.
Oh, no. No, I do.
Nope. Oh, no. You have, okay. There's three supporters in this.
Yeah.
It's Tommy,
Gary, okay.
And myself.
So, I've recently learned why people dislike it because of the dice rolling mechanic, but beyond that, I still love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still don't understand the rules, but I enjoy it.
That's what's the fun.
So,
Mm-hmm. It's like playing Hearthstone. Blizzard was just like, you know what? We should put WoW characters in here, and we've got ourselves a game.
Huh. Neat. Anyways, so yeah, that's kind of what I've been playing. I am hoping this week to finish Final Fantasy 15 so that I can actually move into The Last Guardian, because that is something I need to do.
Good luck, buddy.
Also, I really, really want to play Inside before we even get to any kind of
you game. You need to play Inside before that's going to be a big one.
Paisley bought it. I'm pretty sure I'm just going
to... Josh is just like, I'm pretty sure I'm buying it right now.
That's actually great. Without talking about it too much, before we go into break, before our generation comparison segment, we should talk about... We should say the games that we think other people need to play, at least to be ready for a Game of the Year discussion. Kane already indicated, be ready for Final Fantasy 15 and Last Guardian, stuff of that nature. Like... Inside is definitely my recommendation. If you haven't experienced Hitman in any way, please experience that on my behalf. I'll be talking about that game quite a bit.
Uncharted 4.
There we go. That's a good one, especially, I'm guessing, the ending.
Yep. We were going to talk about it.
So, yeah. Get ready, Doom. People. Doom, definitely.
Last Guardian and Inside, I think, are the two that I'm going to have to focus on. Just... Doom.
Uh-oh.
Doom is Doom, so you can't spoil that for me. Uncharted 4, I haven't played the series, so talk about it whatever you want.
Try to spoil Doom, I dare you.
I totally went and watched the Danny O'Dwyer three-parter. And
oh, I need to see that.
Fucking great.
Yep.
But yeah, there's no chance I'm going to get to FF15, so I'll choose Last Guardian and Inside over those two.
So,
yeah, Inside's definitely a big one.
Oh, but... Kane, I did want to ask you, have you, just with, like, hearing you talk about Last Guardian, have you played Brothers, Tale of Two Sons at all?
Yes.
So good.
Okay. Like, some Last Guardian moments remind you of that game?
Yep.
Or anything
definitely some comparisons. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to go, this is very spoiler territory, but.
Yeah, like, I basically have been waiting for a game that had that same kind of sentimentality and emotion to it. That's why it's one of my go-to recommendations, because you don't see it very often.
Yeah, Brothers is much more of a streamlined process. The gameplay is pretty good, and the story is pretty good the whole way. The Last Guardian is definitely a different experience, but the co-op, you know, that whole thing is definitely
between
there.
You and the animal and everything. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
We're going to go have a break, guys. We'll be right back.
I just need some water. That's all I need.
All right, and we're back. Now 100% sneeze-free. All right. So, we're going to get into a comparison, a little thing that I drew up. It's actually kind of more just purely raw data on my that I kind of pulled together. But just to give you a little bit of backstory, so, working in the game store, often Cameron and Tommy and I will get people to come in, and they'll walk in, and they'll look up at the wall, and then they'll just kind of sit there and think for a second, and you're like, man, I swear, there's just no games out, and just, like, turn around and just head out and just leave. And, it happened to me a little while ago, kind of recently, but it got me actually thinking, like, so if we did a direct comparison between last generation and this generation, how many gems had released in the consoles in that time period? Because they always, the other thing they do is just compare it to last generation. Like, man, there's just so many great games on the old system. How come they just can't have anything good on this one? So here we are.
Yeah.
Just kind of for curiosity's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Exercise.
Where's my Rumble Roses XX?
In the past where it belongs.
So, you all can't see this, obviously. But I've made kind of a spreadsheet here that has all the different releases sorted out by their release date and also by month. I guess, first off, you want to just go over just like launch titles, like the first 3 months?
Yeah,
I'm in. I'm in line. I'm in line for the ride. Let's go. Got my ticket.
So I suppose in the first 3 months for the 360, the bigger releases are going to be like Cameo, Tony Hawk's. I guess Maybe Project Gotham for some people.
Condemned.
That was a pretty spooky video game.
I feel like that's the first one worth note out of anything.
No
mentioned.
Way, dude. Amped 3, the most amazing story mode a snowboarding game has ever had.
Give it the trophy.
Like, I just assume playing through that campaign, many drugs were consumed in the making of that game.
But yeah, so that was like the first month.
A lot of sports titles, a lot of re-releases from Xbox PS2 generation, like Tony Hawk. Like, I remember actually working during this launch window, and Tony Hawk's American Wasteland got the tagline in the store, Tony Hawk's American Waste of Money, pretty quick, because it was literally just a prettied up version of the Xbox release. Like, it wasn't even made for the new hardware. They literally just ported it up. Gun was the same way. But you had Call of Duty 2, Quake 4, Ridge Racer 6, surprisingly, Condemned, Amped 3, and Need for Speed Most Wanted, like the good Need for Speed Most Wanted, came out that year. And then PGR 3, the big thing with PGR 3 was Gotham TV, where you could watch other people play the game, that type of thing. And then a lot of sports titles. Cameo also was there.
On Xbox 360 launch day, I bought Cameo and Perfect Dark. And then I went to Cameron's house.
One of those.
No.
What?
Don't lie to the people.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Dead or Alive 4. That didn't come out until a little bit later.
No. The night that we both got it.
I just associate that so hard to the 360 launch.
Oh, I want to deny
that. Yeah, that was launch window. but, yeah. Between Cameo and Perfect Dark, one of those.
Perfect
is
Dark
it.
Was terrible. Dog
yeah,
shit.
One of those is a wreck.
It's pretty bad. It wasn't great. Yeah. Cameo was charming.
Yeah. It was not great.
Yeah, I like Cameo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I kind of noticed, I guess, between the two consoles, or the Xbox One and PS3, or honestly, I guess across all consoles, is the second month is scarce.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the second month for Xbox 360 was just Dead or Alive. That was it.
Yeah, because they could such a big effort to even just get it launched, take a breather, and let things sink in.
That's pretty normal. Like on the the Nintendo 64, for example, had what Pilot Wings and Mario Kart for
Wave Race and
it was, maybe it was Wave Race. They had two games for like 6 months.
Yeah, or GameCube had a launch window too, going from Pikmin, Luigi's Mansion to about Smash Bros, and then it was just silent.
Yep.
Pretty much the first 6 months is kind of considered launch window. And I think in Dead or Alive 4's case, they tried to make the launch, but they couldn't do it. And so they tried to get as close as they could.
Yeah, but I just thought that was kind of weird. I figured like a lot of the, or maybe I'm just remembering this wrong, but a lot of the wordage when it comes to, like consoles before they release it were, you know, just like we're gonna hit the ground running and like it's gonna be consistent. And I don't know, like the third month, like there's a lot of decent games that come out, like for 360, like the new Fight Night, or not the new Fight Night, but Fight Night Round 3 was a pretty big deal for its time. Burnout Revenge, I mean, there's Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, which I thought was actually more of a port. Oblivion came out In the third month of its launch.
Well, no.
Oh no, that's the fourth.
That's
actually.
I'm way down
the fourth. Yep.
I don't think we should look at the stuff chronologically beyond its launch window so much. Just so we're not just reading down the list. I think that that's definitely its first year, is games like Oblivion and stuff like that. But we should look at the launch windows of the other systems to kind of compare.
Oblivion did come out pretty early, didn't it?
It was. Yeah, it's first 6 months for sure. PS3's is even worse. PS3's launch is terrible. Like, terrible.
Yeah, and no one bought one either.
I mean, I guess Resistance Fall of Man, the first one, though.
That's a good game.
It's far cry from like Resistance 2.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Man, well, this is
what
this
about
is bad.
Ridge Racer?
Untold Legends, Cameron's game.
See, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth stealing my idea.
It wasn't. It was a bad.
It didn't turn out. They had the PSP. They made two on the PSP. Sonic the Hedgehog came out pretty quick after the PS3 came out.
Sonic 06 made its grand debut.
So I would say that 360 launch had maybe two or three games that are at least like
worthy of talking about 10 years later. PS3 possibly had none. So I guess what is
Virtua Fighter 5 is actually pretty solid, but
oh, I'll tell you what the PS4's got, baby. It's got Knack. That's worth talking about.
Yeah, Rezogun is what that game is. Cool.
Second one, man.
I think launch titles just suck nowadays. Is I think what we're gonna figure out here.
Yeah, Battlefield 4. I mean, that was definitely a pretty good. Although I think it came out. I can't remember if it came out on Xbox 360 first, like Xbox 360 and PS3 first, and then PS4 and Xbox One. I'm not sure, but definitely shines then. That
like I said, man, Rezogun, that game is underrated. Rezogun is a really good game.
I haven't looked at the PS4 ones yet. Rezogun is good. Was there anything?
I thought we were talking about PS4. Yeah, Knack.
Both really.
Oh yeah.
So, Black Flag, I mean, but that was just multi-platform release too, which is see, the PS4 and Xbox One benefited from the continuation and length of the 360 and PS3.
Exactly.
Yeah, although I want to say, like, Xbox One probably did have a better, like, a stronger launch again. They had, like, Dead Rising 3, they had Forza Motorsport 5.
Killer Instinct was a successful
Killer
launch.
Killer Instinct.
Angry Birds Star Wars.
I think Rise Son of Rome deserves a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that game is definitely not bad. I played through probably about half of that game, and it was pretty fun. So, like, yeah, I think overall, like, Microsoft tends to have a stronger start, but then kind of Sony works on their long term afterwards. But
maybe it's one of those things where the PlayStation architecture just takes a little bit longer to get figured out, but then once developers do, they make some solid games for it.
Yeah, but
I think Xbox One is the winner of the four, though. If we individualize the systems, I would actually say Xbox One has the most different choices.
Totally. And if you look at, like, the first 3 months of pretty much all of these consoles from last gen and this gen, the first game that really sticks out to me that's really good is Titanfall. And that's on Xbox One.
Yeah.
That was that's like about the same amount of time between launch and Titanfall as Oblivion was.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
Thief was a big letdown. That's definitely not. That one was a real sad letdown.
Yeah.
And then, PS4. Flow was a port. Don't Starve PC port.
Tomb Raider
Definitive I guess Outlast
Edition
was actually a pretty
ports.
Interesting game, but that's about it.
That game is terrifying.
Yeah.
But so maybe
PS4
we flash forward about a year. I mean, there's definitely some notable games in between, like, the launch and, like, its 1 year anniversary. Like, just looking at the Xbox 360, let's see. Rockstar's Table Tennis was the 6th month.
So many people came into the store just to play that game.
So
I almost think
what we should do is go pick a system like 360 and then go down the list and call out, like, the truly great games, in a sense. Like, the ones that we just got done talking about, more or less. Or at least the ones that we think are worthy of bolding. And then we should just kind of do a count, because the real argument isn't between kind of launch weekend or first year or anything like that, because we're past that point now. We're 3 years in. The argument is 3 years of the last gen to 3 years of this gen. So I think we should just look at the collective breadth of titles.
Dead Rising. Dead Rising, that came out in August. That was the 9th month of the 360. Saints Row got its start in August as well, too, of that year. Which, I mean, the first one wasn't that great at all. But
yeah, it really picked up on, too.
Yeah.
But, like, you got, like, Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Just Cause was originally Avalanche.
What's that?
Just Cause. Avalanche Studios?
Yeah.
That was a Disney developer.
Yep.
Well, that they shut down recently, but
Fear, but yeah, Gears of War didn't come out until a year later.
I was actually thinking, did we, not that it's exactly like a top 50 game, but did we snub Fear on our list? I feel so. I don't think that was even in our honorable mentions.
I think
one that wasn't eligible?
I don't think it was on our honorable mentions, because, it was one of those things where I think it came out on PC before the
first
last generation of consoles came out or something like that. It could be wrong.
I think it's one we could have missed.
I think Well, because I remember Fear being kind of like a port to Xbox 360. It wasn't like a simultaneous release from PC to to 360, so
I don't know if PC ports ever got in the way as much as console ports were what we drew the line on. But
well, I'm saying more just like if Fear came out and then 3 years later it came to Xbox 360. Like, Fear came out quite a while ago. I can't remember when.
It was a year.
I remember.
It was a year difference? Let's see
here. From PC to 360, yeah. But yeah, I think it's actually one that we just missed. It's not like I said, it's not a huge deal one. I think Gears of War and Viva Pinata, especially because I think Just Cause does. I think Just Cause and Saints Row do well based off of the franchise success after the fact. But I don't think either of those two games were terribly notable. Cause one, especially
the franchise,
cause waves. I don't think
it was really the sequels that got everybody interested into the
Dead or Alive Extreme 2. Very significant.
Are people bolding
Rainbow
stuff?
Six that... Vegas.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Kind of the first, like, really good, like, aside from, like, Gears of War, like, that totally, like, tactical.
What's your favorite Lost Planet game?
They made a Pimp My Ride for 360? What the fuck?
Oh, yeah, of course, dude. It's got, Ghost Riding the Whip and everything. Jeez,
it does. It really does.
Two is amazing.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, I would probably say that of the Lost Planets, Lost Planet 2 is the best one. So
right now, I'd say we're probably building your 3 out of 5 star games or above, more or less.
Yeah, like there really isn't a whole lot.
Because yeah, you do have to kind of lower your expectations in the first couple of years. Like The Darkness was an okay game in retrospect. At the time, you kind of could take what you could get.
Yep, that's why I played it, honestly.
Yeah, so do we switch over to PlayStation 3 now?
Yeah, sure.
Check this out for the first year.
Are we only going down like a year?
And then there's a little bit of a time dilation as well too. By the time we got to the end with like Gears of War and Rainbow Six Siege and all that, this is just when the PlayStation 3 is getting its start. So there might be like with another year's worth of games and stuff like that, it might seem a little. Like PS3 might have maybe, I don't know. I'm not actually seeing much.
So Skate is at least there in 2007 that jumps out.
Oh yeah. Skate's a really big one.
Yeah, honestly, the entire 360 launch year, I don't know if PS3 missed much. Like there's Sonic the Hedgehog, Enchanted Arms, like not heavy hitters here.
Did we
Warhawk Lair?
Well, there's like Oblivion. Came out in 2007, which for its time was a pretty massive deal.
Which that was late on, I guess, it was 06 on the 360. So yeah, just the Oblivion release, really. The two consoles are pretty much the same when it comes to comparing the generations.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I gotta say, this first year of old gen is pretty underwhelming.
It's rough. Yeah. Undeniably rough. I really feel like we are stretching on a couple of these titles to even bold them. Kind of from... The tier I was imagining was going to be like, hey, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. There's one. That's a good one.
Well, how about Ratchet & Clank Future Tools of Destruction?
There we go.
That's definitely a bold.
Like, I'm just looking at Ninja Gaiden Sigma, and that's a port of an Xbox title, like original Xbox title. Like, that's how far they were reaching.
Okay. So, seriously, not much else. For Sony there in first year as well, too. But
Heavenly Sword and all the crab massive damage.
Which on the flip side...
Or no, wait, that was Genji.
We're like, never what, mind. 2 years Genji in too. On the 360, 1 year in on the PS3? Like, what does the PS4 and Xbox One have to offer in that amount of time?
We're 3 years in on our consoles now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually kind of why I made the comparisons, because like I did the first 3 years of Xbox 360 and PS3, and we just rounded 3 years on PS4 and Xbox One. So,
I mean, if we're counting first 2 years, 2015 was incredible.
Ooh, but that first 2 years would be... Oh, yeah, I guess. If it's holiday of 2015, would sneak right in there.
Yeah.
That's where it ends. Yep. Yeah, 2015 was real good. And that's where I think this generation pulls away from last generation, essentially, is, I think, about that year. But, I mean, I like Mario Maker... I like the ideal of Undertale, and I know members of this podcast worship Undertale. That came out that year. Witcher 3 continues like 2 years later to go down as possibly one of my favorite games of all time. All of these were 2015.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so like 3 years in on the 360 and PS3, I mean, which 2007 was also an equally great year. That's where I think you could make the counter argument.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Orange Box release. I want to say, sadly, Wii's not on this list, but that was, I want to say, the year of Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, and Bioshock came out, too.
Bioshock came out that year.
Rock Band. Mass Effect.
Yeah. Call of Duty 4.
Let's see.
07 goes down. It's like it's talked about amongst like 1998.
It's kind Breath of
Paradise eh, was just a month after 2007. So they hit it pretty hard, yeah, too.
That's 2007, it's Assassin's Creed came out 2007. That's kind of proof of concept for Assassin's Creed 2, but that got the ball rolling.
Seems like the end of the second year is consistently pretty good.
Right, and I think a lot of these people that Josh and I and Tommy deal with are people who are still kind of living in, you know, where this, let's say up to the middle Earth Shadows of Mordor game of the year.
I think, right.
If you look at the generation as that year, anything before that, it hadn't really gotten there, but I think it really hit it in 2015.
Yeah.
I personally think it's a cheesy statement that's said all over the internet with video game media, but I totally agree with, I don't think there's ever been better time for video games. Not just your
totally
AAA games, but your independent games. In fact, when we were doing our Game of the Generation research list, one of the things that I thought was really interesting was I think it was like Slate.com, you know, it wasn't like Wall Street Journal or anything, but it was a guy who was willing to write an article with the headline of why independent games can't exist in the game industry. And that was about 10 years ago, almost to the day. And at the time, I guess he could have been right, but clearly he was very wrong, thanks to things like digital distribution, Steam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, without all that stuff, we wouldn't have games like Axiom Verge. Man.
Yeah.
So many. When we do our, and I think this is going to be the last time we probably record 2016, but when we kind of record our Game of the Year discussion and do our personal top 10 list and all that stuff, I think a lot of us, independent games, I would say, just at a guess, are probably about half of our list nowadays, if not more.
It's probably my entire list.
Most, for myself, yeah, same.
My list is actually pretty AAA heavy, honestly.
This year, I think, was extremely strong overall on the AAA. I think I would take the top 5 games of last year over the top 5 of this year, but I'd probably take the top 10 of this year over the top 10 of last year.
Yeah, I would
too. It was a very, like, very strong year. Just I don't know if I had any, like, slam dunk world breakers. But I had some really close ones.
Yeah. I only have 17 games from this last year that I actually played. So I essentially have to cut off 7 and then organize the list. That's my top 10. Like, I played a lot of games this year.
So we've already done our Game of the Generation list and stuff like that. So we kind of know what's at the top of that list. Say you're, and this list is unfair because it's about 7 years, give or take. So, you know, we have our Mario Galaxies, our Bioshocks, our Last of Us, which came out very late. So almost maybe discredit Last of Us, especially in this argument. So with that said, think of your favorite game from last generation, or at least a handful of your favorite games from last generation. Are there games this generation that you would put at that tier? And if so, what are they?
The Witcher.
You know, Witcher, definitely. Doom.
Doom, for sure. The Last Guardian.
Definitely hits up there. Last Guardian.
MGS5 doesn't count.
No, MGS5 totally counts.
It totally counts.
Definitely counts.
And it would be up there for me.
I wasn't sure if we were doing the whole because it came out on all 4 consoles thing.
Oh, I think it was designed with Xbox One.
That was shocking.
PS4 in mind.
I still can't believe that was on 360 PS3.
That just shows
that's pretty impressive.
The versatility of the Fox engine they made. Like, it is a damn shame that the engine is just gone forever.
You know, you might say it's like that baby that Kojima had that was teleported away from him.
God damn it. Okay, you could say that.
Okay, no. You could say it. You'd be wrong, but you could say that.
Honestly, I would probably say in terms of like Infamous, Second Son, I would rather play that than the previous two.
I think Infamous Second Son is a great game.
That's a borderline launch title, at least launch year.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mario Maker for me. Obviously, that's no secret.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. However,
there's a couple Wii U games. Wii U games, though. I guess we can't forget that. You're mind you, Mario Maker is all time king for me with Wii U. But you know, your Bayonetta 2s and your Pikmin 3s, maybe. I don't know. Pikmin 3s at that tier.
3D World for me is really important.
Oh yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
I would definitely put 3 up there. The first two are really good. 3 just takes everything that the first two had to offer and just really, really make a great package. Also, Tropical Freeze.
Yep. That's good.
The Wii U had on-point first-party games.
Yeah, ridiculously strong.
Yep. Although, I'm struggling to recall any of my Wii U. It's probably because I'm just a big old fat Nintendo hater. not really a Nintendo hater, but you know.
We hate if out of guys, love.
Let's see here.
It's frustration.
You guys have already mentioned Doom, Witcher 3, Metal Gear Solid 5. Okay. Like, I'm trying to go through and, Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yes, thank you. That's a good one. I'd put both Ori and Inside at least on that brother's level.
Yeah, Ori I would probably put in the top 25 just because well done Metroidvania game.
Gosh, I love Ori so much.
Yeah. I like my Metroidvanias.
Yeah, I personally would put Undertale above all those, but
There you go. Uncharted
that's me 4. Fanboying.
No, Undertale. Undertale's worthy of being talked about.
Are we excluding PC releases?
So that one becomes a rough comparison because PC gaming wasn't really able to support something like Undertale.
I think I think the lines have been blurred more. I think that most things come out now on console and PC pretty consistently. Back then, especially in the first 3 years of, 2005 through, 360's launch, there really wasn't, it was pretty diverse games.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that, as far as best of my knowledge, Undertale isn't available Xbox Live or PlayStation Network.
Yeah.
That happens when those independent games get popular enough. It happens way more often than you think.
Yeah, people are definitely talking about it. Toby Fox made that game with Game Maker, which most consoles don't really support that. So it would basically essentially need to be completely recoded.
I wonder what Stardew Valley was made on, because it's already got Xbox
I'm not
PlayStation
sure.
Network. Because that was a one-man project as well. Which, that's also going to be brought up in Game of the Year discussion. You guys better go do your farming research.
Oh, don't worry.
I don't know. I was really tempted on picking it up for the PS4 because I could almost see myself having a better time playing it there than it would on my PC.
I think you can cross play it with Vita, maybe even too.
Oh fuck!
Right. Dude. I was thinking about buying it again just for the Vita factor.
Oh my goodness.
That'd be a good on the go game.
Know, honestly, is it coming out for Vita?
I think I may have been confused. It may be PlayStation 4 and Vita, not PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Because. I mean, if it was coming out for PS4 and Vita, I would probably just only pick it up for my Vita so I'd have one really fucking good excuse to use that thing.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah. So, yeah, I think was there some comparisons that you were drawn earlier with the list camera that you...
Oh, I was just, kind of that whole... That whole bit there was just kind of, I think, almost a testament that we could rattle off at least a handful of games that we put in that upper echelon are, say, your greatest of the generation, but I think even beyond their generation, they're at that BioShock Mario Galaxy level, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're only 3 years in, where that generation was, 7 years. If you include Red Dead Redemption, that was, what, 2010, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2010.
A lot of the heavy hitters came out towards the second half of the console generation rather than started.
And I don't see this generation wavering. Yeah.
No. Think about, when Square Enix finally re-releases the Final Fantasy VII remake, there's still that somewhere in the engine. Gran Turismo 7?
Sport. Gran Turismo Sport.
And then later 7, though, right? Because they still have to actually do a numbered release.
Probably. Sure.
Maybe.
I mean...
10 years
GT
later.
GT7, come... Yeah, exactly. PlayStation 5. GT7.
Yeah, from our perspective, probably infinite time away from us now. Yeah. But
it's funny how that stuff's also relative too. I think for the game industry we've had up and down years almost constantly. They almost always alternate. But right now I think that this technically could be considered a quote unquote down year, but that's only because last year was maybe like a 12 out of 10, and I think next year has potential to also be a 12 out of 10, where, like, this year would be one of the greatest years of all time if we didn't just get done with last year, which I think was very, very strong. And I think next year is going to be even stronger than this year, which is a crazy statement. Like I said, I can't say it enough that I'm not knocking this year. I think next year is just going to be that crazy.
Yeah, like, for this year, it's kind of a down year for me, honestly. And it's not because there aren't any great games out there. It's just that I'm having trouble thinking of stuff that I would put head and shoulders above other stuff. Like, there's a lot of well-matched up games. Like, between Doom, Hyperlight Drifter, and Inside, I'm just like, I don't know which one I would put above the others type of thing.
Yeah.
So, but it's more evenly matched, whereas last year it was like, okay, MGS5, Witcher 3, Mario Maker. You kind of see some clear-cut games that ran away from the rest of the crowd.
Yeah. So, well, I thought that was... overall, I just thought that it would just be kind of a cool thought experiment. I wish I would have had a little more time to kind of, like, refine it into more, like, questions or, like, okay, you know, do you remember this coming out sort of thing? But
basically, things are better than people remember them.
Yeah, holidays. Holidays happened. But and I think as well, too, is, like, with, like, games getting better and better, like, the thing Cameron pointed out there is, like, it's not so much like every time they release new consoles that developers just knock down their tower and then restart rebuilding from the ground up again. You know, they take a lot of their experiences and continue to build on top. So, yeah, as we go forwards, it's only going to get better. And, yeah, the whole it's never been a better time to be playing video games. I think that's just a slogan of all gaming.
Right? It's cheesy, but I think it's super true right now. I really think that we get on here on our podcast with our little internet platform. Sure, we like to gripe and criticize little things, this and that, the Game Awards and all that. But really, I think our industry is and has been the better or best industry as far as other things, you know, movies and all that other stuff go. I really do think, like, we do movie rentals at the store, so I am constantly looking at the new releases each week for movies, and man, it looks like the PS2 days to me. A whole bunch of garbage, and every now and then you see something good, where really it's rare that a month goes by, let alone sometimes during the hot season a week goes by where a video game doesn't really catch my attention. I think it's we're so strong right now.
But the Assassin's Creed movie comes out pretty soon, and that's got a really strong Metascore. Check that out.
No, wait. Which is it really?
No, it's like, which 15%.
Apparently, I was gonna say, I'd be so surprised if that was like.
Yeah. No. Apparently, it's rated PG, like not PG-13, just PG.
What?
How?
Family Dude, friendly, I don't know. Man.
Josh and I. Yeah, Josh and I were trying to figure it out earlier. It doesn't make sense.
They stab people with hidden blades.
PG. Yes. I don't know.
Michael Fassbender just worked his dreamy magic, and it was good to go.
Yeah. He just batted his eyes at the review board and was just like, are you sure you can't go a little lower?
But
they're just like, okay. Okay for you, Fassbender.
Cool. Well, does anyone else have anything else to add to this? Any wrap-up on the list at all?
No.
I think
not on the list. I'm just looking forward to HEDQ. In a couple weeks, so that'll be fun.
I'm biased because I'm living in the moment, but shooting from the hip, I rule. I'm going to pick a winner. I'm totally ruling on this generation. So far, the true competition will be these next 2 years. Those we'll have to maybe even compare the first 5 years of each generation here in a little bit of time. But so far, I'm totally saying Xbox One, PS4 as a whole, and that includes digital games especially, which is almost an unfair comparison. I definitely would go Xbox One, PS4.
Oh yeah.
Like, if you throw in digital stuff, sure. Like, that, it does seem a little unfair.
Not to say that the last generation doesn't have a really strong library. You know,
that's it's just it was it getting goes. Built. Like, but, they were building out their infrastructure and everything like that.
Yeah.
You did have stuff like Trials, Limbo, you know, Explosion Man, and all that.
It's
other stuff.
Just much stronger this generation. So, cool. Well, then I think. I'm going to lead us out. We're going to try to... I think we did... Is this a short one, guys? Did we do a short podcast?
Pretty short.
Just think, in like a week, we will be in the same release year as Persona 5.
We'll be the same release year as a lot, and I feel like went a little crazy on Game of the Year stuff, so we'll have to find a way to try to do that in a timely manner. Good luck. And then we also, I really want to do the draft that I've been talking about, where we, it's going to require a little bit of research and planning on my part, but where we essentially, I think what we'll do is we'll take the first half of 2016, we'll take all games that are slated to release. If they get delayed, then tough, that's just like getting injured. Right. And I think we're going to draft games, and essentially we'll figure out a random order and put our money where our mouth is. I'm not sure. I think we should base it off of probably maybe five reviewers that we appreciate. Something, some sort of metric, something that we can use to actually be an impartial judge of what games do better than the other games. But I think it'll be fun for us to go through and round by round find the sleeper picks and stuff for at least... I think it should be anything that comes out pre-E3. I think E3 should be where we draw the line. And then E3 will come and will give us a bunch of announcements, and then we can do a part two for 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Sounds fun.
That is going to do it for episode 12. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your patience. And yeah, this will probably be the last time you hear our voices in 2016. Thank God. Good rinse, 2016.
Yeah, it's pretty garbage.
Video games were good. Yes. Everything else, eh.
Yeah. Right. So, anyways, happy holidays. And we will see you guys, or everybody, in 2017. Bye
now. Go play Overcooked with your families.
Okay.
We lost him.
He left us. He left us!
That's not what I'm gonna do.